I thought it so ironic that Nicole boxed me in this morning with the lions on the floor. Obviously, it's also just because we are aware that it's not just people in here, but there's a camera. And it is different. But the limitations, because I'm going to speak about limitations, and I just thought it was so funny. I thought it's so funny. It's a sign. It's a sign. Practice what you preach. maybe if you can start with Mackie, just the first slide. Thanks, Mackie, for helping me. Bye-bye, Donkey Peter. Thanks for helping us with the slides. I'm going to start something today, which I'll finish at another time. So, life is hurried, life is busy. We've spoken about this. No one needs to tell you this, but these images are some images, and it's just limiting images. Regardless of your life season, regardless of your personality, regardless of everything, if you live in our day and age, then the probability is that your life is hurried, that your life is busy. And it's difficult. We all wish we had more time. We all wish we had more money. We all wish we had more freedom to experience stuff, opportunities. And when we live in an age, a day and age, where that's proclaimed the whole time, that you can have what you want. You know, the world is your oyster. You can go where you want to, be what you want to. The world is open. All the opportunities are there. I mean, it's not just limited to your little town in the Free State, but you can even live in a limited town in the Free State and earn euros, perhaps pounds will be. Anyway, you can earn anything. You know, soon we'll be able to earn ruples where you live. Regardless of where you are in the world, the world is opened up and there are so many opportunities. But I want to propose this morning, and I want to give you a scripture for that, that all of this promises and the striving and the stresses, the hard work to move to these opportunities, these spaces, leaves us fatigued and hurried. That is one of the core issues in our world and age. That we want to ignore limits. We want to live as though we don't have limits. Amazing. John Mark Comer wrote in his book about ruthless elimination of hurry. He wrote this line, and I'm going to gift you with this. Some of you will love this. Some of the teenagers will tell your parents this every single day from this day forward until they leave the house. Until Edison, 220, 250 years ago, designed the light bulb, the average person slept just over 11 hours a day. Huh? If this is all you needed to hear from me today, then you're welcome to go now. If you say you feel tired, no surprise, huh? Until 200, for the past 6,000 years of human history, people have slept 11 hours a day on average. That's the average. So some people, we know those people, you know. When I was young, my aunt called me Bear, Little Bear, because I would hibernate. I don't sleep. I hibernate. I'm going to sleep. I'm committed. You're going to have to wake me for lunch. And I wish Nathan was like that. Anyway, my boy. But it's amazing. It's just that's how we... But now we live fatigued and tired, and I'm wondering why. You know, why? Maybe because we sleep half the hours that people did 250 years ago, because we believe that God created night with electricity, and then he created the day, you know? I always read that when God said, and there was day, and there was night. You wonder, why does he repeat that seven times, you know, in the Bible? Maybe that's the first thing you could realize. There is day, and then there is night. Day is for working, night is for sleeping. Okay, anyway, we should tell our kids that. I've got pictures of babies. Maybe I was thinking of one thing. No, Margriet is not pregnant. Okay, so that... But this is really, and I'm going to say that our fatigue and our busyness has to do with the belief in the next slide, Mackie. Thanks. Got some pictures. With the idea that we strive for limitless. If you want to sell something, if you want to sell timeshare, if you want to sell data, if you want to sell phone contracts, if you want to sell restaurant, club memberships, then all you need to add is unlimited. You can have as much. If you want to invite me to a restaurant, then you can have an unlimited, eat as much as you want buffet, and you will have the place full. Because truly we believe, as a culture, truly we believe that the good life is if you tell me there is no limit. We truly believe that our limits are things which prevents us from having the good life. That the good life is beyond this line. The good life, and we want to go. I can't. It's impossible. There's a magnet. It's impossible. But the good life is beyond these lines. We truly believe that the good life is beyond my pay, beyond my bank's statement, beyond my calendar, beyond my time limit. That the good life is beyond this. That truly, if I could only have more time, more money, more opportunity, more lunch, more whatever, more friends, more fame, more power, more beauty. If I truly have more than that, my life will be better. That's truly at the heart of our culture. If you don't believe that today, then probably, if it's true for yourself, then probably you'll be able to see it for the rest of the people in this room, or at least those online following you. But we truly believe this. We truly believe that limits are definitely not a gift from God. They're things we need to conquer. You know how many religions in the world exist to tell you that God or some divinity or some spiritual principle is there and will empower you to cross over your limits for his sake? And many times Christianity is preached as though God wants to give you power so that you will have unlimited of what you want. God is here. We approach God as the God who will break our limitations so that we can have the good life. We pray that God will do that. Now, it's true that there is something like sin. But I want to point out today that limitations were placed in creation. If you just read the Genesis account, the first three chapters of Genesis, you will see that even before the fall, that there were sincere limits that God placed in. He said, Adam and Eve, for you to have the good life. This is the boundaries of Eden. You wondered why on earth we would have the boundaries of the Garden of Eden. Why would God give us boundaries? Who cares about the boundaries of the Garden of Eden? But it just says that there was a shalom garden that God created, and this was the boundaries, the limitations of this garden. This was it. And even within it, God said, you can, yes, enjoy it. Enjoy everything. Just not that. Just not that. Don't touch that. Your good life is enjoy everything, but this is the limits to your good life here. Avoid the boundaries. Avoid this thing which will cause absolute destruction. And the thing he said was, don't think that you want to be God. You are creature, not creator. And the creature has embedded in the concept of being created limits of where you live and how you live. This is the gift. You are human, not God. Until Satan came and he said, not the veil. No. No, Adam and Eve. The good life is when you can decide what you want, when you want it, and how you want it. You can be God. You can be as God. Just to be as God. You can decide what your limits are and what your boundaries are. You can decide for yourself. Don't let someone else tell you what to do. Look at this good life. I mean, imagine you can have it all. And then that's where they wrote the first Queen song. You can have it all. You can have it now. And that's when sin fell. And afterwards, again, God instituted boundaries and say, these are the consequences of your actions. But there is bondage. But I want to say, apart from bondage, before there was bondage, there was limitations. So it is absolutely true that there are spiritual powers and things that Jesus came to set us free from. But this is the point. Not every single thing that is a limitation in your life is bondage that Jesus came to set you free from. From Paul's perspective, these things are gifts for you. And we know this as parents. I mean, Nathan, I've told this joke so many times, but it's true. I have prayed the shepherd psalm so many times at night for Nathan, for myself, for Nathan, you know? Say, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall make you lie down in peace. Te slaap tyd. I shall make you lie down in peace. It's good for you to sleep. And he wants to play the whole time, but I know that if he plays the whole time, him and the whole house will be drudgy tomorrow, but tomorrow he stays at home because he's a little boy, he doesn't need to go to anything, but I need to work. But he will have a messed up day. He will not have a good life unless he comes to the concept of there is day and there is night. There is day in which you can play computer games after work, but then there is night in which you need to sleep. You know, it's like you need to sleep. Limitations. Our culture really presses against limits. Thanks, Mackie. It's really the concept of we want to push away. We really believe that the good life is beyond these limits, beyond my bank balance, beyond my income, beyond my time, beyond my physical space, beyond the limitations of my status. Married, with children, without children, old, young. We really believe that the good life, so we want to have a time when we can have everything we want to right now. But truly, God did not create us like that. And I want us to evaluate this. While we're standing still there, I want you to take a moment as you look at this next slide, which is just, this is the fantasy of our time. If you've missed out on all these movies and comics for the past 50 years, in these things, in these images, in these cartoons, in these movies, in these books, sci-fi books, Marvel comic books, in these fantasy books, lies the essence of what we truly believe. I will have a good life if I have all the wisdom, all the power, all the speed, all the knowledge, all the space that I can. It's a meme. It's a meme of our culture. It's a meme. This is not a beautiful meme, but it's a meme of our culture. This is, the good life is when I can have it all. The good life is when there is more, when there is not limitations. I want you to take a moment and just locate, just to think about your limitations. Don't say it to the person next to you, but literally just write down, what are the limitations? And I want you to, Mackie, if you can jump back to the previous thing. If you see this picture of the guy kicking against a wall, what is that one limitation or those two limitations where you feel boxed in life? Where you feel, you just feel that you're frustrated and angry because it steals your joy, it limits your potential. Truly, if you believe that you could do so much more if this thing was not here, or if this thing was here, what is that? We are limited beings. It's amazing. We are limited beings, this body. You know, your body is a limited being. The previous year, COVID, it was difficult because there's like time there. But during hard lockdown, I thought, well, I worked many, many hours, but I thought it would be amazing. So Magriet was at work the whole time, or not the whole time, but she was doing a doctor thing in the hospital with his stresses, and I was at home, homeschooling and being a lousy pastor. Frustrated at my limitations of not being able to do that which I'm so amazing at. I really believe that if you can just let me go, I will be a flippin' amazing. But now, I'm going to say this out loud. But now I have these two gifts in my home that need attention. I love them. But I would be so much better at my calling, at my purpose, if they could just manage themselves. And you feel guilty at the thought, and you feel guilty and frustrated. So I decided to every day just have, I have to have 45 minutes of just hard exercise just to get the stress out of my body. And I did some fitness, and after a while I was quite fit. I was quite fit and quite strong again. So I remembered, it's been a while since I've done my one rep max of a snatch or of a bench or of a whatever. So I decided, let's do this. So my neighbor across the road also had some weights, and I got Yaku's weights. And soon I discovered, what was that limit? That I could do the one rep and I could not do the next rep. And that limit I lived with for a while, and the physio practice in the area, and MChem made good money out of me for the next while, because I discovered again that my body truly is limited. That there was a time in which I was 25 in which I could lift heavy weights higher, and I'm not there anymore. I'm not there anymore. My wife still likes my body, but it's because she also has amnesia, a short-term memory loss. You know, forget that I looked better at some point. Anyway, but your body is a limitation. And some of you, your body is a real limitation. You struggle with a weakness or a sickness that you really just want to pray, God, if this thing was just away, God, if my mental, if my emotional state was just better, but I'm not as stable as I want to be. I struggle with depression. I struggle with anxiety. I struggle with mood adjustments. I struggle with regulation. It's difficult for me. And you fight against this thing the whole time because this thing is preventing me from having a good life, from serving you well, or just from being enjoying life to the full. This thing is a bother to me, you know, this body. St. Ignatius wrote about his body as my brother, the donkey. He's talking, so you could say that in another English word, but he's talking about his body as a donkey. And he just said that it's sometimes useful. It's definitely not worthy of too much attention or glory. It's just functional in getting me from A to B. And your mind, maybe you struggle with memory, but maybe you just struggle to be as bright as the other students in your class or the people at work. You just wish you could remember more things or the right things. You could just wish when someone confronts you, you had the words quickly jump out. How many of you feel like that? Afterwards, you go like, wow, I should have said that. That would have been like a ting chong cha moment. It's over. But you don't have that bright mind. You wish you had, you truly wish you could have more. And you practice and practice, but you just never as bright as you want to be. You just, your personality, your temperament. Some of you, have you ever had moments of great passion where you come over so passionately that everyone afterwards is offended because you came over so passionate? But for you, it's just you being you or your temperament. Maybe you're such a peace-loving person and you just never come to the point where you confront the person sitting in front of you that you need to. And you just wish that, God, can I just not be like this? Can I just tell my boss, I won't do this anymore. I won't do this. This is enough. But next time you find yourself, yes, sure, I will help you again. And you hate yourself. And you go out and pray and you say, God, your abilities, doesn't matter how gifted you are, there will always be someone more gifted. And with our phones and technology these days, we're so aware of the fact that there's always someone better. Always someone better. We've got this mirror on the wall. And not necessarily with beauty, but with your gifts and your creativity and your stuff. Just comparison. There will always be someone better, more amazing. You think your limitation is your family of origin, and some people just come out of these homes and their homes are so perfect and the people are so whole, and you just didn't have that. You just didn't have that. Your relational DNA is messed up, DNA, because of where you come from. You struggle. You always feel behind. You always feel like you're catching up to the people around you because what they assume as normal love and normal Christianity and normal relationships, you just hardwired to trip over and become like your mom, your dad, or the dad that you never had. It's always like it's your legacy. And it's the same for your socioeconomic situation, your finances, you know, your limitations. Money is a limitation on both sides. I've seen in ministry on both sides. We are so aware that people grow up in abject poverty or so economically, they just always, there are just things that are not possible for them. It's not possible. We can say you can do anything, but the reality is they can't do anything because they simply can't afford to do what I deem necessary, what I deem as normal. But it's not just that. I've seen people struggle with the weight of a massive trust fund that they have inherited. And the responsibilities of life is just too hectic. It's so massive. That at 22 years of age, you are so responsible. You come to the reality that you're so responsible of so much wealth. And you've really thought about Jesus saying over and over, perhaps the best way for me to serve Jesus is just to let it go. To just hook it away, give it away, and continue. Because the weight of the responsibility is just messing up with your emotional state the whole time. Your season in life. See so many people with different seasons in life here. Your singleness. Many times for you it's a frustration, it's a limitation. It's just you always feel that you have to find someone to be with. For many people, the fact that you are married to someone, just you are aware that you can't be as a good employee, worker, business builder as you want to be, because you feel obliged and responsible, and you are, for the love that you made a vow to, or the kids that you have home, at home. Or the same, you know, you turn 70, you turn 50, you turn 60, and you're not, different life phase, different limitations. And then just your lifespan, you are thoroughly aware that you will live only a while, and you don't know how long. But you know that life is short, and the older you become, the more you're aware that there are limitations. And the last one is your past failures. I don't know, I have these moments frequently in my prayer time, or sometimes it's the reason why I have a prayer time. It's just I remember what I did last summer. Last summer meaning 20 years ago, 25 years when I was a student. You remember these things and you just go like, the reality is that I really did that. That's me. I did that. And I wish I never did. And now I'm branded. My conscience is scarred. I know Jesus has forgiven me, but I hurt and I did damage, and that was me. And now I'm living with that, and I could never get away with it, and that will always be something back there that I've dealt with. Yes, we have prayed about it. Yes, we've opened up with it. Maybe you have a record. Maybe you were divorced. Maybe you messed up another marriage. Maybe you did something, but there's something. It's a limitation in your freedom and limitation what you can do, can and cannot do because of what you did in the past, you know, and certain things just keep us bound. So Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden and burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. This is a beautiful text of Jesus, which speaks into our culture, into us pressing against our limits, into us always fighting, because we truly believe that the good life is if I move beyond these limits in my life, if I move beyond my financial status, if I move beyond my intellect, if I move beyond my relational status, if I move beyond my work, if I move beyond the boundaries of my small little town, if I move beyond something. And it causes us to constantly strive and constantly fight and never being at peace, because we always believe that the good life is beyond these boundaries. And Jesus says something, and I'll come back to it later, but I want you just to take note of these words. He's saying, learn from me my humility and my meekness. My humility, I'm really not as important as I think I am. I'm really not as bright as I think I am. I'm really not as significant in the whole bigger scheme of the world as I want to be. And our meekness, I really don't have, just because I have the power to do something, does not mean I need to do it. Limitation, inhibiting yourself, learning a brokenness to not fight against the system and take on more responsibilities. I want you to, but we'll look at Paul now, because Paul really got it right. Can you just take a moment and give an eye smile to the person next to you? I smile. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. In this chapter, in this book, Paul again defends his apostleship. He defends the fact that truly I have authority. Must be frustrating. Sometimes, for those of you who are parents, you know what this feels like, eh? Like, no, really, I am the parent. I have the right to say to you, stop it, go and take a bath, you know? Parenting is not all bad for those of you who are single or pregnant, don't worry. But Paul is defending his apostleship. And you find this is a pattern in his life, and I hope at some point you ask, why does he need to defend it? If he's so awesome, why does he need to defend it? And it's a cue for us. Maybe he was not as awesome in person as we want him to be. maybe he was not as awesome in person. And he says so. He says, I'm not a good speech person when I'm in front of you. I'm not a good orator. I'm not good looking. I'm not important to anything. Just a hint there. But he's defending his apostleship. And then he tells of a story of an account 14 years ago. And you go like, oh, wow, this is why Paul is amazing. It's because Paul had this awesome revelation. He says, I was taken up into the third heavens. And he's cueing like a moment that he had, this most amazing, significant moment that he had with Jesus, where he saw Jesus in person, that deferring on him his apostleship. And he has this moment, but then he just says, but you know what? I'm not going to talk about that. I can boast about it. It was significant. It was amazing to me, but I'm not going to boast about that. I'm not going to brag about that. I don't want to impress you. I don't want to say that, listen, I'm really an apostle because I had this awesome moment with Jesus and Jesus said to me this. He says, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go that way. This is what you want me to do, but I'm not going to go that way. Then he says, I won't boast about the spiritual experiences because I don't want anyone to give me credit beyond what they can see in my life or bear in my message, even though I have received such wonderful revelations from God. So to keep me from becoming proud, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me and keep me from becoming proud. Listen to this. He's saying there's some bodily thing, some frustration, some pain, something which causes me great damage. And then he says, a messenger from Satan to keep me from becoming arrogant or proud. And then he says, but three times, I beg. When a Jew says three times, holy, holy, holy. When a Jew says three times, he means I've thoroughly and sufficiently and I've really prayed about this until I'm exhausted. I've prayed about this and I beg the Lord to take it away. But each time he said to me, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. My grace is all you need. I hear someone giggling there. I think we all get that. It's like really, your grace. Just take it away. It's my click. My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I'm glad to boast about my weaknesses, my limitations, so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses and in the insults, hardships, persecution, and troubles that I suffer for Christ. For when I'm weak, I'm strong. When Paul speaks about limitations, when he uses the word thorn there, there's an image, Mackie, two slides down. Thanks for helping me. There's an image there, and I hope you can see it. It's an image from a Roman god. It was still used during the Second World War. Today we have barbed wires and spikes, palisades on our walls. It's the same thing. It's a boundary used in military battle mostly, but it's a boundary so that one who wants to come over these walls is impaled. A thorn in my flesh. So the thorn in my flesh is not like a, ouch, I stepped on something. It's like, whoa, I've been impaled. This is the image that he gives here. That's the word that Paul uses there. It's a massive barrier of impaling. It's like a massive pole that sticks through me. Paul is saying, man, I have this impalement that prevents me from stepping over, from moving forward, from going on, from doing that which I can do. I'm inhibited by this painful thing. Every time I want to push forward, it's just too painful. I can't move beyond it. It's something that, and he says, it's the Lord gives me this limitation, this painful limitation. It's a gift from Jesus to me. It's a messenger from Satan that torments me the whole time. He's saying, I've got this thing which I can't come over with. I just don't get it right. And he says, it's that. And then many times when people read the epistles of Paul, and they read Acts, you know, there are different ways. People go and saying that maybe it was a speech impediment because he himself said, I'm not a good orator. So for someone to be, but I mean, would Jesus really call someone to be an apostle or messenger on his behalf? If he has a speech impediment, Moses, you know, it's like, huh? Would Jesus do that? Would you? Yes, he does. Yes, he does. So some people go, maybe his frustration is the fact that he's such a good writer because he's such a bad orator. Speech impediment. Imagine you trying to defend your apostleship and defend the gospel with a spit impediment. I told you, when I was young, I couldn't pronounce a R or a S, and my parents named me Ross. So, so I would say to the kids in class, they would ask, what's your name? And I'd say, Hoth. Hoth. I say, what? Hoth. Anyway, speech impediment. By grace, I'm not there anymore. Huh? Some people just think it's epilepsy because of the language used in the Gospels. Epilepsy. He would get epileptic fits. Perhaps it's because of, you know, the fact that he's been stoned a few times. He's been beaten up so many times, so it's very possible that he had epilepsy. And that's less helpful. He goes like, so Jesus, just take it away so I can serve you well. You gave me a mandate to preach the gospel to all nations. I'm limited. I can't go because of my sickness. Or perhaps some people said it's an eye infection. You remember his account written to the Galatians. And he, to the Galatians, he says, the reason why I preached the gospel to you the first time is because I had to stop because of my eye infection again. And I stood. That's the reason why the gospel came to Galatia, to the churches in Galatia. He was on his way elsewhere, but he hadn't... An infection prevented him physically from moving forward. He had to stay until he was healed. So maybe it was a painful eye infection, cataract or something. Some people just, when he writes about loneliness, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, in other places, when he talks about the fact that some people are eunuchs because God decided that they should rather not marry. Just loneliness, just the fact that he's lonely. He's a man lonely, moving away in a very perverse society. He's struggling, something that prevents him. And some people, maybe in the context of this gospel and other gospels, is Galatians, is the Judaizers. A Jewish sect is physical opposition of people that constantly discredit him everywhere he goes. And whenever he preaches the gospel, they discredit his message. So, but it's a limitation. Regardless of what it was, for Paul, it's a real thing. It's a thing that was painful and frustrating and made him angry. And I want you to get the anger bit. I want you to get the frustration and the anger of the limitation, of a barrier, of you wanting and believing that you should do something. And it's for God's sake. It's God's call on your life. But you can't live it out because of this. And this is what Paul is writing about, this thorn, this impalement, this barrier, which whenever he tries to get there, it's just too painful. He cannot overcome it. There's no way for him to go beyond it. And I think we all can identify in some way. So when we read this text, the first thing in this text, we see it is a mirror to my humanity, a mirror to our humanity. We can get ourselves. We are limited. I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. We live in a culture which says, if you put your mind to it and if you work hard enough, you can do anything. It doesn't matter what your culture in South Africa comes from. If your culture is from the Afrikaans or the Dutch side of people, or the French people, the Huguenots, then you will walk barefoot over the mountains and you're going to go there. If you come from some of the other cultures in the country, then you're going to say, listen, we have fought a few revolutions in this country. We're going to make this happen. Nothing can stop us. We will find peace. I am someone who does not give up. I don't submit to limitations. I will give over. That is our culture, but it's also the culture all around the world. We have all been sold the American dream that anything is possible and everything is possible for you. The reality is, this is what I want us to see, that we are humans. We are creatures created by God for God. And like Nicole gave me a box, God gives us all a box. Limitations. It's a thorn in my flesh, a gift from God. It's not Satan who sent in, it's a gift from God first. It's an inhibition from God, a box which keeps me where I am. And it's painful every time I go there, but it's a gift from God as a reminder to find grace in this box, find life in this box, to live out your purpose inside of this box, inside this box. This is not something we preach regularly. I mean, not many people are here saying, God's gave you a box to stay in, and you go, yes, praise God, I have a box. Thank you, Jesus, for my box. If I were to preach here today and I'd say, with Christ, all things are possible for those who believe. Nothing is impossible for those who believe. Yes, God can make you do all things through Christ in Jesus. You know, ignore the context of all those texts, but this is a good sermon, you know? You're going to go like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, even the Afrikaans people would go like, yes, hallelujah. But the reality is, God created me human with gifts that are inherently limitations. Inherently limitations. Because he called me to find him where I am, and to find flourishing life where I am, and to live out the calling that I have for him where I am. We don't like that because we truly believe that I am awesome and that this small stage is too small for me. This small place is too full. The good life is beyond this. But these barriers are gifts, like in Paul's life. Barriers, gifts for him. Leaves us exhausted to fight it, angry, but we are limited. Paul was limited, we are limited. It's God's fault. Secondly, we see this text as a window to God's kingdom. See the text as a window. It's we can see something. And it's amazing. We see this, I mean, Moses. I just refer to him now. But I mean, God calls Moses. God knows Moses has a speech impediment. I mean, fiery bush that doesn't consume. God talks to him, has a meeting with the Most High God. Then we find hail, darkness, pestilence, rivers into blood, the death of the... We find massive... I mean, you save a whole nation through the miracles that just came up from him. Small thing, just can you loosen his tongue? Can you loosen Moses' tongue? No. No, I will not. I will not. I will not. But God, can I get some help? Yes, get some help. Go. I sent you. I called you. Yes, the guy with the speech impediment. Yes, I called Gideon, the smallest of the smallest of the tribe of the most oppressed, the most insignificant person ever. I called him. I called Jeremiah, the man who seriously struggles with depression that he wishes a few times that he dies. Elijah wishes that he dies. And these are my messengers of hope. And you go like, yo. I know some people that personally that can also probably be messengers of hope then. Anyway, David. The youngest of all the people in the battlefield who was there incidentally, had no armor, had no military experience, but it feels a tug to go and face that giant to liberate the Israelites from the Philistine giants and army. And he's comfortable with his limitations. No, sorry, this armor is too big for me and I feel clumsy. Sorry, I'll go with my slingshot. Daniel and his friends, slaves, exiles, foreigners living in tent camps in the most populous, most luxurious, most technically advanced nation ever in their time, Babylon. These are the people that will serve as my ambassadors for the kingdom of God in Babylon. John the Apostle, it's amazing if you think about it. We read his letters, and these letters are being reread. Whenever we have a major crisis, local or international, we go to the book of Revelation. It was written by a very old prisoner on an island exiled from humanity, whose heart was breaking because he cannot comfort God's people that are suffering. Because he was an apostle. The last remaining person who saw Jesus alive was removed from the church. The last person. And he was wanting to comfort them and encourage them. He had severe limitations. And he fulfilled his call in his limitations. Because he was crying out to God in his limitations. And he had no idea that his little letter, that his 21 chapters of strange things, we comfort the church for the generations to come. Jesus, I mean, if we talk about limitations, God and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. A man who lived in an obscure little town, population 300, education, you know, died early, born out of wedlock, shamed, had to run away from the king. I mean, God could have done really much better if you think about it. If I were to plan the movie, then he would probably be born in Caesar's household, Herod's household, as the high priest, you know, he would be born as something. But now he is this ostracized, strange prophet, poor, limited there. But he embraced the gifts of the limitations which he had, and God's purposes was born from his limitations. I wonder whether, I mean, Jesus left the scene, died, crucified. I mean, that's the end of his earthly life. Didn't really have a significant life on earth up until that point. Significant, amazing. But I mean, it could have been so much more. But he stopped, ended there. John the Apostle on the island of Patmos. We read it now and we're looking back. We go like, whoa, God did something amazing. Wow, your limitations, your thorns, you embraced it. You embraced it. And somehow, the church through the past 2,000 years have been encouraged by what you saw in God, the church then and later. But from his perspective, he died not knowing, not seeing everything. Huh? It's amazing. It's really amazing. Daniel and his friends, David, all of them say Moses. I was given a thorn in my flesh, a kingdom, a view into God's world, God's perspective on our lives, God's perspective on us fighting our limitations. I was given a thorn in my flesh to torment me and to keep me from becoming proud. This is really significant. I don't want you to move away from this. We frequently, I mean, just in the last 3 years, if you were to write down the names of, I want to use the word famous Christian leaders that have fallen in disgrace. For them, for their families, their local churches, their ministries, and for the church as a whole. If you were to write down the names, it took like 5 years, write down the names. This buyer, this was Catholic buyer. And the one thing that all of them have in common is this thing, where they work and fight against burnout to become this famous great person, to do great things for God, but at some point they believe pride gets them. Pride comes before the fall. It gets them, it takes them out. Paul's gift from God. So the first thing we see is our thorns are gifts from God to keep us from becoming proud. Proud means a happy independence, a joyful independence. I can do everything. It's like in the garden. It's like Adam and Eve saying, I don't have to go to God to find out what's right and wrong and what's tolerable and not, what's good and not. I don't need to do that. All I need to do is, I want to know and I want to be able to decide for myself what is good, what is right. Because I can. I can live independently from God. Pride. The idea that truly I am amazing and my gifts are really good and it's my gifts that will make the world a better place. The gifts that God has given me that will make the world a better place. I can bless the world. I am significant. It's me. It's my powers. He said, no, the thorn was given as a gift. I'm going to move on. He said, my grace is sufficient. It's all you need. My power works best in your weaknesses. So take pleasure. I take pleasure in my weaknesses. For when I'm weak, I'm strong. Pete Scazzaro mentions five things that limitations gift us with. Five things. The first thing he says, it gifts us with humility. It means a dependence on God. It means an awareness of my limitations, awareness of the fact that I'm not as bright and as smart and as powerful and as amazing as I think I am. It gifts us, it reminds us every time we go there and the pain hits us, the impalement, the pain, the thorn pushes in, we just go like, no, I'm not as smart. Was bright as I want to believe I am. I really have limitations. I cannot do it all myself. There's a dependence on God. I need help. And that draws us into Christ and to know things. Paul, in these seasons of prayer, praying to God, will you please deliver me of this thorn? In these seasons of prayer, it's amazing that he says, I have a new revelation of Christ, which I've never had before. Oh, come on, you all know someone who has walked through a very dark time before with Jesus. And afterwards, they will share stories of meetings with Jesus that they would have never had, and a knowledge of who Jesus is and a knowledge of the kingdom of God which they have never known up to that point. I mean, Daniel's friends saw the one walking with them in the fire, and that season the fire was hectic, but it was the time when the presence of Christ and the knowledge of who he is was most vivid to them. And it's the same year. Paul says, this is precious. I don't want to talk about that revelation that I had. I'm going to talk about the revelation that I constantly have because of my ailment, my thorns. That's precious to me. A revelation of who he is and communion with Jesus, intimacy, because I have to draw grace from Christ. If you talk to my wife about a medical career and a medical studies, it's really the same. Those seasons where things are really hard and where studies and stuff is really difficult, where she cannot go to work unless she takes half an hour or 40 minutes of just worship and prayer. It's not possible to go to work unless she meets with Jesus to draw grace, strength. It's amazing. It is the limitations, which is a gift from which we know Jesus, Christ with us, the hope of glory. I need you. And then direction. It's amazing. Our limitations do direct us. If John was free to not be in the island of Patmos, we would not have the book of Revelation. If John was able to roam freely and encourage the churches and meet with them one-on-one and pray for them, encourage them, no one would have had those revelations. No one would have had those communion with Christ, and we would not know what we know today. It's true. It's really true. Our gifts is this message. You know your limitations. You know your purpose and your mission, your direction in life, because of the boundaries. This is where I am to stay. And this is my invitation, the last one. So the invitation for us is exactly this. The invitation for you and me is to be acutely aware, to become acutely aware of your limitations, to name them. To name them, to write them down, to know what are the limitations of my life. What are the things that I just wish wasn't there. I just wish I would have, what would, if you had freedom, if you desire freedom, if you would write it out, what would you desire to be free of? And would name those things before God. Name those things. What can you do if I had not these things in my life? And name them, write them out. And the gift is this, to receive them as gifts from God. Paul's shift, the invitation here, Paul's shift is, he says, when I looked in my prayer, in fighting with God in prayer, because usually, I mean, he does spiritual warfare, eh? He changes stuff. He cast out demons in the flesh of the woman who walked behind him for a few days. He did lots of miracles, you know, healing a man who was just bitten by a poison snake. He did lots of miracles in God's grace. But this thing, he couldn't go away. This barrier simply didn't go away. And then he goes like, okay, this barrier is a gift from God. You give it to me. So God, invitation is, God, I want to see this gift as a gift of humility. This painful experience, this frustration, this limitation, this barrier, as a gift from you. I cannot go without you. I need you. A gift to grow in humility. Not once off, because this barrier will probably not go away. Secondly, it's a gift for me to need to draw near to you. I need strength from you. I need help from you. I cannot do this on my own. I really need you. I really need you. In which area of your life do you need Christ most? For some of us, it is the limitation of a marriage which is not that easy. For some, it is the desire that you had a companion. For some, it is, God, I wish my English was better, that I can get a real job, education. You know, it's things, limitations. And the world says, give it all your best, run through that limitation, jump over the wall, fight it, find a loophole, find someone to get around that wall. And after long times of prayer and fighting, you will come to the realization, but maybe this is a gift from God. And I should accept that the good life, God's good life, my mission, my purpose, my boundary lines, Psalm 16, have fallen in pleasant places. This is my inheritance. It's good and it's pleasing. Here in the presence of the Lord, there's fullness of joy. At his right hand, there are pleasures for me. Stop fighting it. Receive it as a gift. Draw grace from Christ to help me keep on mission and to witness the power of Christ in this. For many people, their limitation has become their ministry, their mission in history. You know it. It's like you have an amputated leg. It happened. You fight it. Prosthesis doesn't work. But then you realize, wow, God, truly, I can have a good life. I can have a full life even without this leg. Truly, you are able to make me live a great life with this. And that is the reason why you have a testimony. Perhaps the only reason why you have a testimony that people want to listen to is because, wow, you contently and joyfully live with your limitations. Wow, God has really gifted you with a gift. Jesus said, come to me, all you are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Jesus said, learn from me. Learn from me. I've come to embrace the limitations. I've suffered obedience, suffered to the point of obedience. I've come to receive my limitations as a gift from the Father. And it's in my humility and gentleness that God's purposes through my life will come. I'm truly not as amazing. I truly cannot do all things. I only have what the Father gives me, and that is my limitation. That is my gift, and his grace is sufficient for me. Jesus said, "Your yoke, my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." I want to invite you. I'm going to ask the worship team to please just lead us in one more song, something familiar. And I want you to take a moment and think about your limitations. Think about those painful things that you cannot overcome, you have not overcome. If it is true that perhaps Jesus also sent you a thorn in the flesh, a messenger to torment you, if it's true that perhaps you also have something, a gift, a painful gift from God, if it is true, what would that be in your life? What would be the thing that you simply, your wish was not there, but you haven't got around to overcoming this one. It's not possible for you. What would that be? And I want you in our prayer now, in our worship, I want you just to write it down. Maybe it is as simple as a small baby in this moment, in this busy season of your life. Maybe it is that simple. Maybe it is that person at your workplace, that one. And if I say a messenger for Satan, you go like, it's that one. It's that one. It's that one. You're laughing, but what causes you pain, frustration, and something which you have no handles on? You wish it was not there, but it's there. And you feel that it prevents you from doing everything that God wants you to do. What is that? Write it down. Maybe it's something physical, economically, doesn't matter. But in prayer, I want you to take that to God and say, God, I want to present this to you. And reading Paul, I'm thinking maybe this is your thorn, your gift to me. Maybe you already know that you just have to say to God, God, thank you for this gift. Will you help me grace to live with it? Teach me to live with this yoke of humility and meekness in this thing. Just ask him for that. Or maybe you just want to go, God, I don't know whether I should cast this thing out or receive it as a gift. Just have a conversation with God in this. Can we do that? You're welcome to stand, pray while we worship. After the service, I'm going to pray for people who need some grace from God.